Live from Edinburgh, Radio Napier News.
Good afternoon and welcome to EN4 News. I'm Robbie Thompson. Your headlines this lunchtime. MSPs are to look into the impact of the pay gap between male and females in Scotland. Scottish retailers are reporting that like-for-like sales have significantly dropped, and nearly a third of Brits are living on inadequate income. And Andrew Fleming will be giving us updates on the latest sports news. But first, cracks in the glass, but the ceiling still won't smash. Research suggests women will not earn as much as their male counterparts until 2069, nearly 100 years after the Equal Pay Act was introduced in 1970. Holyrood's Economy, Fair Work and Jobs Committee will examine why 6.2% gender pay gap still remains in Scotland. Minister says they were committed to removing pay inequality, and Adam Sturrock has more.
Members of Scottish Parliament are to examine Scotland's gender pay gap and the possible impact on the economy. According to the Economy, Fair Work and Jobs Committee, women working in Scotland earn an average of 6.2% less than men. Conservative MSP Bill Bowman says there are a range of factors as to why such a pay gap could exist.
Comes about as a mixture of women taking time out from working. Obviously, in the past, they would be the main raisers of a family. And also the representation of male and females in the workforce may not be exactly 50%. Therefore, you do have a difference coming about because of that.
Studies show that women are still underrepresented in senior management and leadership roles. They also aren't working in as many higher paid jobs such as technology, IT and engineering. This pay disparity between males and females is to last until 2069, close to the 100-year birthday of the Equal Pay Act from the 1970s. S&P member Julie Martin says that such an estimate is far too long to wait for parity of pay.
My view in being interested in this generally is that we are really doing a disservice to Scotland's economy if we do not eradicate the gender pay gap, because if women are earning similar amounts of money to men, and there are statistics out there that women are earning on average about £180 less a week than their male counterparts, then that's less money going into the economy.
UK government figures show that equalising women's productivity could add almost £600 billion to the economy, some of which will boost the coffers in Scotland. But Bill Bowman does say that the Equal Pay Act can offer some help for those affected by gender bias at the moment.
Clearly illegal to differentiate between men and women when you pay them in the terms of the Act. And the regulators need to enforce that. If anybody believes that they are not being paid equally, then there is a remedy there for them.
There is no clear answer as to what is the best way to combat this issue, but Bill Bowman, Julian Martin and their colleagues on the committee will try to find out starting next week. If you have any information to give, you can contact them via Twitter at SP_economy.
Post-Christmas penny counting has left Scottish retailers experiencing a decline in sales over January. Our reporter Lauren Buchan got the lowdown on why.
Scottish retailers experienced a significant decrease in sales last month as shoppers tightened their purse strings following the Christmas period, according to a new report. The Scottish Retail Consortium found total sales were down 3.5% around the same time last year. Overall, food sales were down 2.6% on January 2016, while non-food sales were hit the hardest with a decline of 4.3%. Consumers focused more on essential spending, while the poorest performance was seen in clothing and footwear. Store manager of retailer Urban Outfitters in Edinburgh, Colin Proctor, told EN4 News about in-store competition.
I think there's been a drop in store sales due to online business. And I think online retailers can offer bigger discounts than stores, especially this time of year.
Speaking to shoppers on Princes Street, some of them were feeling the post-festive crunch.
As a shopper, I feel like this month's pay between, you know, December and January has been such a long one that even now it's come to February, I'm still only buying the essentials and the leftover sort of debt from last month.
I don't really feel like I've cut back my spending at all. I mean, I've been a little bit more cautious, but nothing really has changed that much.
I spent so much money on Christmas that I'm very skint right now and I don't have any disposable income.
Police are currently trying to piece together the last hours of a boy who died on Monday night. 13-year-old Blake Ross went missing from an Edinburgh support unit for children in care and was found unwell on a Lothian bus around 4 p.m. on the day he died. He is said to have been absent without diabetes medication for over 48 hours. He was taken to the Sick Kids Hospital, where he died a few hours later. The investigation is ongoing, however, police are currently treating his death as unexplained. Finance news now, and it has been reported that nearly a third of the UK's population is earning below the minimum wage. With rising inflation and living costs said to rise 10% by 2020, many struggling families are fearing that their situation could only get worse. Georgia Downey has more.
New research has found that nearly a third of the population of Britain is living on an inadequate income, according to the Joseph Rowntree Foundation. In order to help those who are in financial difficulty, Forest Cafe in Tollcross is allowing visitors to collect things for free, without having to make a single purchase. This ranges from food and drink in the cafe to clothes and games in their free shop. We spoke to Christine, manager of the cafe, to talk about what they have to offer.
Yeah, we have a free shop, and that's round the corner. Mm-hmm. And anybody can drop stuff there, and anybody can take stuff there. So you don't have to bring something in to take something. It's really completely free.
The Forest Cafe also offers free shelter throughout the day, as well as information on homelessness and poverty.
And now Dan Smith with a roundup of today's local stories.
A three-year-old boy has died on a farm in Fife after being run over by a tractor. The incident took place in Crossgates yesterday evening at about 5:15 p.m. Police Scotland are currently investigating the incident. Unemployment has risen by 6,000 people in Scotland during October and November 2016, according to the Office for National Statistics. This brings the total unemployment in Scotland to 135,000 versus the 2.6 million Scots in the workforce. Scotland's figures are in contrast to the fact that the UK's national unemployment rate has gone down from 5.1% to 4.8%. Scotland's unemployment rate now stands at 0.1 above the UK's national unemployment average. Work and Pensions Secretary Damian Green outlined how unemployment can drop in certain UK areas.
It's not a particular cohort. There are obviously geographical differences. There are some places where it's more difficult to find work, and that's why the industrial strategy that we're developing, one of the new elements in it is to make it particularly place-based so that there aren't those areas in the country that feel left behind.
Residents surrounding the Royal Hospital for Sick Children are planning a buyout of the building in order to ensure its replacement meets the needs of the community. With rumours this morning suggesting the CN's Road building will be turned into a children's art gallery, the newly formed Martin and CN's Development Trust aim to register an interest in purchasing the site through the Scottish Government's Community Right to Buy legislation. The replacement for the Ross Bandstand is set to be awarded through a design competition run by the Ross Development Trust. The bandstand, famous for having Edinburgh Castle as a backdrop, is set to be demolished with a pavilion, a visitor centre and improvements to the surrounding gardens being the focus in the new development.
Moving from home comforts around the world, now it's Matt Lawless with today's international news.
Investigations are taking place into the murder of North Korea leader Kim Jong-un's half-brother. A manhunt is underway in Malaysia after Kim Jong-nam died in an apparent poison attack in the capital Kuala Lumpur on Monday. Malaysian police have confirmed that a woman has been arrested over the man's death. Sky's Asia correspondent Katie Stollard explained why the death is so significant.
He was, for a good while, the heir apparent for the North Korean state. He was the eldest son of Kim Jong-il. He was certainly for a time being groomed, it seemed, for leadership.
Members of the Republican Party have called for an investigation into the former National Security Advisor's links with Russia. Michael Flynn resigned on Monday amid claims that he had discussed US sanctions with Russian officials before President Trump took office. Mr. Flynn admitted misleading White House officials about phone conversations with Russia, and White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer claimed it was an issue of trust that led to the resignation.
We had to review whether there was a legal issue, which the White House counsel concluded there was not. Whether or not he actually misled the vice president was the issue. And that was ultimately what led to the president asking for and accepting the resignation of General Flynn. That's it. Pure and simple. It was a matter of trust.
The American actor Harrison Ford was involved in a near miss in an airport in California after he mistakenly landed on the wrong runway, narrowly missing a passenger plane with 110 passengers on board. The Indiana Jones and Star Wars actor, who is a certified pilot, has previously been involved in several air incidents.
Thanks, Matt. Scotland's health and medicine sectors could be boosted by retrained refugee medical staff, thanks to the Refugee Doctors Programme. The programme is designed to assist asylum seekers and refugee doctors living in Scotland to achieve registration with the General Medical Council and compete for vacant posts in the National Health Service. Eva Coutts went to find out more.
The medical community in Scotland reacts positively to the Refugee Doctors Programme. Doctors and medicine undergraduates think retrained refugee medical staff could boost Scottish NHS and help end the doctor shortage. Patricia Miltree, secretary from the Glasgow Local Committee and a British Medical Association representative in Scotland, explains the benefits of the scheme.
The benefit hopefully will be quite widespread, clearly to the doctors themselves who are keen to contribute their medical skills and knowledge to healthcare within Scotland. And I think by these doctors being able to work again in their chosen profession, I think that will be of benefit to them and to their families. But I think also it will be of benefit to the patients and the NHS in Scotland, given that we have an acute shortage of doctors in some specialties and within general practice just now in Scotland.
Hannah Bruton, an undergraduate medical student at Edinburgh University, has expressed what she thinks are the pros and cons regarding the initiative.
It's good in the sense that if refugees who are fleeing from awful situations and are rightly entitled to be refugees have a chance to work and contribute to the society they're part of, that's brilliant. I have my apprehensions about the level of medical training and ensuring that they are certified, so I know how rigorous the medical training programme is in the UK, and I don't necessarily know if the training programme in other parts of the world is the standard we get here.
Going through rigorous training to meet UK standards is of vital importance to work at the NHS, Dr. Greg Jones, clinical lead at NHS Education Scotland, said. Before doctors can work in NHS Scotland, they need to prove they have a high standard of written and spoken English. Only then are they allowed to sit the exams they need to prove their medical knowledge is satisfactory. The Scottish Government started funding this programme, which is unique in the UK, to give support to trained refugees doctors to re-enter the medical profession in Scotland.
And now the sport, with news of a brutal attack in Paris last night. Andrew Fleming kicks it into touch.
We start off with a result which took the football world by storm last night, with Paris Saint-Germain thrashing footballing giants Barcelona 4-0 in the Champions League at the Parc de France. First leg goals from Julian Draxler, Edinson Cavani and a brace from Angel Di Maria have given PSG a dominant lead in their last 16-round match, meaning that Barcelona are in real danger of failing to reach the tournament's quarter-finals for the first time in a decade. Tonight, Arsenal face the daunting task of travelling to the Allianz Arena to face German champions Bayern Munich, who are undefeated at home in 23 games. Their manager Carlo Ancelotti has defended his opposite number Arsene Wenger, who has come under scrutiny by many in recent weeks.
In our job, it's normal to be criticised, and so for this reason he has no problem. He built a good style of football, and so I have a lot of respect of this job at Arsenal.
In rugby, England second row Courtney Laws believes that Owen Farrell has what it takes to become the English captain. It's rumoured that head coach Eddie Jones plans to ring the changes for the Six Nations encounter with Italy a week on Saturday, with current captain Dylan Hartley expected to drop to the bench. Laws explains that he has the correct mentality to wear the captain's armband.
He's a good player, he understands the game very well, so you listen to him and he is a leader of the team. But like I said, we've got a lot of them, which is part of, you know, why we're such a good team.
And finally, cycling's golden couple, Jason and Laura Kenny, have announced they're expecting their first child. The couple, who have 10 Olympic gold medals between them, announced the news on social media yesterday, following their 12-week scan.
Thanks, Andrew. And finally, the Iranian Film Festival is underway in Edinburgh this week, bringing some of the best cinema from the Middle East into the capital. Rachel Henderson immersed herself in the culture.
The Edinburgh Film House is currently playing host to the Iranian Film Festival, which celebrated the opening ceremony with a film screening of Take Me Home. Edinburgh's biggest independent cinema has treated cinema-goers once again to a wide selection of new releases at the cutting edge of Iranian cinema. Sara Kadami explained why the festival is so important.
With this festival, we hope to introduce people of Edinburgh to Iranian culture, history, art, both contemporary and non-contemporary, and we want to bring something new to Edinburgh. Edinburgh has got many festivals, it's very welcoming to other cultures, so we found it to be a very good city to hold this festival.
The festival aims to look at the future of Iranian cinema by increasing our understanding of Iranian culture, their history, and people at a time when perceptions of the country in the Western world are heavily skewed by politics.
As a festival, we are a registered charity and we try to keep away as much as possible from politics. It's a very fine line to tread on and we try to do our best to walk that line. The salesman obviously has been in the news with the position that the actresses and people involved have taken in terms of the Oscars and not attending it and so on. But for us, the main thing was to bring the work here to Edinburgh, to be able to share it with the people in Edinburgh. And we try and stay away from the other stories around it.
As film festival director, Sara Kadami aims to show people Iran's rich history and its contemporary cultural life by addressing misconceptions we have of the country. From the rich art and music scene through to its history and food, Sara wants to showcase the best of Iran. By providing a platform for new and upcoming artists, the festival encourages interaction between British and Iranian artists, performers and historians, which she hopes will strengthen the existing relationships between Scottish and Iranian people.
Iranian cinema has grown quite a lot over the past, I would say, 3 decades, really. When you look at Iranian cinema, you see that it's now been to Cannes, winning prizes in the Oscars. Again, we had another film nominated for Oscar this year, which we actually showed in the festival. It was like a UK premiere we had here, really. And I only see it growing, I only see it flourishing further. It's the quality and the variety and the quality of the work that comes out of the Iranian cinema that has secured, for example, our position here in Film House.
That's all for this Wednesday lunchtime. A reminder that you can tune in, you can catch all the headlines at en4news.com and follow our Twitter at en4news2016. Good afternoon.
This is Radio Napier.